Hi, folks. This is... Yo, is this racist? No Tawny this week, and we're doing a bit of a different type of episode. So we'll just kind of like keep the Andrew waffling banter to a minimum. Because this week, I am joined by Cerise Castle. And I guess just hi. Nice. Let's say hello. How are you doing, Cerise?
Hi. How's it going?
I guess like... personally, not worse than a lot of folks, but bad is you know, where my brain is at. How are you doing?
I really like the phrase pandemic fine, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm healthy, I'm eating, I'm clean, but my brain is just a total fucking disaster.
Right. Like, shouldn't complain, but I could is where my brain is at. Like, lots of stuff to be grateful for, obviously, but... let me see. So yeah, okay. So for the listeners, we are doing a different type of episode, I guess 2 weeks in a row, because last week, you know, Jason Concepcion, we ended up just not really taking any calls, and this is going to be another no calls week, I'm afraid. So yeah, I guess, so Cerise, maybe it's easiest if you tell the listeners sort of who you are. Is that the best way to do this? I just realized you have probably been sitting through hours and hours of interviews, and I'm realizing this is not like a quote professional interview show. So I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Anyway, but yeah, tell people who you are.
Yeah. So my name is Cerise Castle, like Andrew just said, and I am a freelance reporter in the Los Angeles area. I have covered things like the unhoused crisis in Los Angeles, local politics, law enforcement. Specifically, I am currently working on a series that takes a look at the formation and proliferation of deputy gangs in the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department.
Yes, it's on Knock LA. It is. I encourage everyone to read it, and of course, we'll tweet it from the various accounts. It is fucking harrowing stuff, and it's stuff that I feel like I don't know. I guess. Yeah, we will be talking about it a little more, and I've already deviated from the loose outline path I mentioned to Cerise before we started talking. So I'm fucking up. Andrew's fucking up. It was a weird week, but so maybe the thing that captivated my attention because it was close to me, and Cerise, I thought I saw on Twitter you were there for both nights. Is that correct?
I was just tweeting frantically from my house.
It was hard to tell, to be honest. I was like, who's here? Who's not? Okay. For the listeners, for anyone not in the, even for people in the LA area, which is a little troubling, but so for the last almost year, there has been a community of unhoused folks living in Echo Park Lake, which is 2.5 blocks from where I live. And it is sort of a byproduct of LA's like horrible housing policy. We as a city are doing kind of everything that we can to make sure people become unhoused and stay unhoused, and the city is not like doing even remotely its job to look out for people and try to alleviate this crisis. And then so Wednesday and Thursday nights, the LAPD, marshaled by Councilman Mitch O'Farrell, who,
boo,
you know, carve his name into your, you know, your board of people who need to have revenge to be taken upon. And this actually goes back again to anyone not from LA, and again, even people from LA or in LA, maybe not from LA, but LA City Council people have huge amounts of power within their district. It feels a little bit, and this will start to get to Cerise's reporting maybe eventually. It feels like they're little crime bosses in each of their little council districts.
Hey, I mean, Mitch Englander just went to federal prison for being a literal crime boss.
Yeah.
He was indicted on RICO charges. So
it is, yeah, it's like really depressing how like thoroughly, essentially organized crime is woven into the civic fabric of Los Angeles?
Home of neo-noir. Like, you know.
Right, 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 right. Without fucking suitcases full of money in the back room of a steakhouse, like, how would the city even function? Asterisk, hopefully there's a different way, but currently there is not. Anyway, in a sort of escalating series of what I saw with my eyes to be lies, I guess, you know, they have a different opinion, and Mitchell Farrell has a different opinion. But as far as I could tell, and from the people I was talking to, warning or sufficient warning, they basically decided that, you know, Wednesday night or Thursday night, they were going to remove everybody from the park. And at night, arriving in riot gear, it was sort of like unnecessarily violent. The police absolutely escalated things and created, for a brief time, an open-air concentration camp in Echo Park. I know that's an inflammatory phrase, and I believe that is what it was. I had people who I know through mutual aid trying to put bring water into the fenced prison and were prevented from doing so. I don't know. I don't really know how else to describe a fenced area that is guarded by armed police where
you can't leave.
Yeah, freedom of movement is not, you know, you can't go in or go out, and things like water can't be sent inside. So I don't know. People got mad at me for saying it was a concentration camp, and I suppose I understand, but I don't know.
Walks like a duck.
It's what it fucking was. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I guess, you know, as a reporter and like someone who is part of and knowledgeable about this system and these systems. So I'm, you know, for all my sort of relative like rhetoric, I mean, I don't know, for my rhetoric, I guess I have had many years where I've not been involved in very much in like on the ground type, I don't know. Work. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, you know, I definitely was like spending a lot more time on my career, and I was, you know, becoming the sort of person that maybe writes a check. But yeah, this Wednesday and Thursday, I was on the street a little bit more, again, trying to help out with mutual aid folks. And it was like fucking harrowing. I mean, the cops are everywhere. They violent and racist and do not make me feel safe. And I'm like a, you know, relatively well-to-do East Asian person. You know, I'm not their target. I'm not better than other people. In fact, I'm worse than a lot of people. But like, it's like it is like I'm a person who police generally overlook, don't harass. And even I was just like, just by virtue of standing near folks who were unhoused or protesting the treatment of the unhoused, it was. I haven't felt like that in a long time. Anyway, sorry, Cerise, I've talked too much. I've talked way more than I would like to have, but just wanted to make sure people were sort of up to speed.
Yeah.
How was your week in that regard? Like,
yeah, I mean, I was keeping an eye on Echo Park Lake as well. They arrested, I believe the count is now up to 13 journalists that were attempting to cover everything that was happening among the people that were detained, booked into custody were two of our Knock LA reporters, actually. So, I mean, that was just incredibly surreal. Last summer, I actually got into my project on LASD as a result of being injured at the hands of law enforcement. I was unable to walk around and do my job after getting shot and hit with a rubber bullet. So I was at home working, and it was just, you know, really surreal to see two of my colleagues going through more abuse a year later after all of this talk and promises were made about treating the press better. Yeah.
I mean, I think I would comfortably say we're into, you know, a couple months into, quote, reform the police. And from my eye, they are actually worse than ever, worse than before. You know, as a percentage of peaceful protesters, they arrested an unconscionable number of people. I saw they were targeting the green-hatted National Lawyers Guild folks. Every one of them got arrested also. You know,
Another
typically,
crime.
typically, when an armed police force in riot gear singles out press and legal observers, usually in a just society, people would wind up in The Hague for that. But we're not heading in that direction. I have two kind of lines of questioning for you, not questioning, but two questions that come to mind, which is that, like, I do feel like knock LA in general, but also I'm going to make an assumption, and hopefully this is not out of line, which is that you are a reporter who is has a clear point of view.
Well, I have my personal views, but
yeah,
I try to make it a point in my stories to let the facts speak for themselves.
Okay. I guess I'm just like, and this maybe is just like a quick tangent and a personal axe to grind for me, because I feel like I know like a kind of weirdly high number of, we'll call them mainstream media journalism people, you know, New York Times people. And I really have trouble squaring like I'll single out the New York Times just because they're the paper.
Because fuck
record.
The New York Times, am I right?
But yeah, I mean, well, honestly, kind of. It's that like that this like idea of like balance, I think, has been like so perverted and abused.
Balance is bullshit, in my
right.
opinion.
Okay.
You don't need to balance with a Nazi. Like that's no. I think that there's a difference between like. I think objectivity, like, don't get me wrong, I think objectivity is bullshit, right? Like,
right.
that your bias comes through with all kinds of things. Like, for example, I think my bias shows in the fact that I chose to, you know, spend 6 months of my life researching the police department. Like, you know, that was, I'm sure that comes from, you know, my lived experience as a Black woman who has experienced law enforcement violence that definitely contributed to me wanting to investigate them, I think. And that's where you can see my bias and my point of view coming out. But again, the facts speak for themselves. I have my own opinions about the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department and what should happen to that. But that's not in my piece. And I don't think that, you know, my thoughts are any more important than anyone else's. Like, that's not my job. My job is to deliver, you know, what happened and let the people that do make those decisions review the information and hopefully make some better choices.
Right. I guess, yeah, maybe the people I've talked to most about this are white and East Asian. So that's clearly a perspective issue. And also just like sort of like believers in, I guess, objectivity. And maybe that's where I disagree with them and what I'm like. It's
objectivity,
cool to hear from you. Yeah.
Objectivity, I think, is just like how the white man sees the world. Truly.
Right.
Like,
white man's subjectivity is objective because they've gotten to control everything. Okay. Yeah. I guess I'm just like interested to hear, because like every time I've had conversations with like old journalism people, they feel very hand-wringy. Like they're just like, well, what can you do? So it is like nice to see reporting like this, I guess is what I mean. That is like has a point. Well, right. And I guess we're drawing the line between point of view and like just being like objective in terms of facts.
Yeah, I would say that I'm objective in terms of like I'm not writing a piece and being like the fucking terrible Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department bitches. Like that's not what I'm writing. I'm writing that, you know, they beat hundreds of people. They've killed people. You know, those are the facts. Like what you do with that, like your point of view on like me telling you that the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department has 18 gangs. They've killed 19 people. Four of them were mentally ill. You know, you could read that and you'll have your own point of view.
Right. It's kind of like a thing that you kind of like, I guess, like have a sense of, or I have a sense of just like kind of knowing the folks that I know. But seeing it in print like this is, it's like a lot. It like is really like illuminating and like obviously hard to refute, et cetera, et cetera. My other thought was, actually, here's a good opportunity. Why don't we take a quick commercial break, because we got to play an ad, and then we'll get more into the piece.
So
So yeah, back with Cerise Castle. See, I'm trying to be more professional already. I would never have done that in a normal episode.
You don't have to treat me special, please.
It is not treating you special. It is truly just like, I'm intimidated because, again, you know what the fuck you're talking about. And that makes me realize how often we're fully bullshitting on this show. Or bullshitting from lived experience and knowing that people cannot call out our subjective, you know, points of view. But now we're talking about facts. And turns out, harrowing for me to deal with actual facts. But I did have a couple questions that I think maybe if our audience is like me, and I assume they kind of are, just some basic stuff. Like, so over the summer, one thing I was trying to do, because I was too, we'll say, health compromised, I guess. I don't know. I was like not really like sure if it was a good idea from a medical point of view to go to many of the protests. So what I was trying to do was listen to the police scanner. And that was wild as an experience. I had not done it before. I think I've said on the show before, but like the thing that was like very disheartening was hearing genuine fear in the voices of the cops, as the same time they were like very dehumanizing, you know, to the protesters and the people. And it was like, oh, they for sure actually think they're the heroes here. Like, and even as they are being racist thugs. And I was like, harder than, you know, they don't even see themselves as villains. So how the fuck are we going to fix this? I don't know. Not that I had to. But one thing I had a lot of trouble with was a thing that I'm just going to ask you from just the basic baby steps level is like, what is the difference between the sheriff department and the police department? I did not figure this out for way too long.
Yeah, it's actually a question that a lot of people have. And, you know, I think that just speaks to, you know, how the systems are set up to confuse people and keep them ignorant of what exactly the hell is going on in the place that they live. So the LAPD, the Los Angeles Police Department, they wear black and white uniforms and they patrol the city of Los Angeles, the incorporated city itself. Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, they patrol unincorporated Los Angeles County, as well as cities that have contracted with them for law enforcement services. That includes cities like Compton, West Hollywood, Whittier, and generally East Los Angeles County, South Los Angeles County, and the Antelope Valley. They also patrol in Malibu, and that like the wealthier part of the county.
Yeah, it's an odd patchwork.
Yes.
That was like, what? Why? Like, why is this? And what does that do to the sheriffs? Is there anything specific that happens because of this? Or you know, because of their... It feels like their huge and amorphous remit really must cause problems.
Yeah, well, I mean, because they cover so much area, they're one of the largest law enforcement departments in the country. I believe they have just under 10,000 sworn officers, which is huge. It's about one sheriff's deputy per 1,000 residents of Los Angeles County.
Yeah, so LA Sheriff's Department is humongous. They you know,
they have a $6 billion budget. That's another thing that I should probably mention.
Oh yeah, right. Go. I mean, you know, that once again is the, like, you know, for anyone listening, I guess no one listening to this, but for anyone listening who needs ammunition, hopefully we can revive a defund the police type discussion. But wherever you fall on police abolition, or whoever you're talking to might fall on police abolition, there is the world where we should all sort of consider, even if you're a person that believes police should exist, you know, I may disagree with you on that, but surely let's talk about the numbers. You know, is $6 billion, does that feel like the best way to spend that our money? And I would submit it is not, especially when you hear some of the things that money has been going towards.
Yeah, 100%. Another thing I'll mention is they have a budget of $6 billion. I found that they have cost taxpayers of at least $100 million between now and going back to the early 1990s. Not a cent of that $100 million comes out of their budget or their paychecks or their pensions. That's all funded by taxpayers. So we're paying for the mistakes that they make. That's coming directly out of our pocket. And they're able to, you know, they don't get disciplined. They are able to continue working. And, you know, they don't really see any downside to bad behavior.
Yeah. You're being real, like, it's really funny because it's like, I don't know how else you would say it, but like, you know, mistakes and bad behavior is like racist murders. Like,
yes. Yes.
Yeah. So obviously, besides, you know, people going and sort of reading the body of your reporting, is there like a sort of best or illuminating story or history that like would make sense to tell people about today?
Yeah. I think that, I mean, I can speak just sort of like generally what I found out about the gangs.
Oh, that'd be great. Okay, great.
Yeah, because they all sort of tie into each other, which is both convenient for my purposes of documenting it and sickening.
Yeah, the multi-headed hydra at least means it's all kind of in the same place. okay, please go ahead.
Yeah, so the earliest deputy gang that we know about is a gang called the Little Devils. They started in the 1970s at the East Los Angeles station. We know about them because they were the subject of a quote-unquote investigation. I say that because the investigation essentially was a captain writing down the names of the people that were in this gang, and that was the extent of the investigation, just creating a list.
Roll call.
Pretty much, yeah. These Little Devils, they were allegedly present at the Chicano Moratorium, which was a protest against the Vietnam War that happened in East LA. It was mostly attended by Latinx people. The Little Devils apparently went out and were part of a group of deputy sheriffs that brutalized people, beat them, savagely. A journalist, Ruben Salazar, was actually killed in this melee by a Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputy. Salazar had actually said to a friend of his the night before that he suspected he was under police surveillance and he was worried about being assassinated. And he was 100% right about that. Following the Little Devils, that culture, they weren't really disciplined. So I suspect that, you know, that culture was able to fester and thrive. And the men that were a part of the gang were promoted and moved around the station. So the culture that they had embraced of the gang was spread around as well.
Mm-hmm. A little question, which is that when people hear the phrase deputy gangs, I think, and probably on some level, this is what crossed my mind at some point, which is like, okay, but what do we really mean by gang? Like, surely this isn't the same as, say, your average street gang in and around, in this case, Los Angeles.
Yeah, honestly, I would say that the deputy gang is worse. I'm not in a street gang, but I have a lot of friends that are. And the thing about street gangs is that there isn't always a criminal element, right? Mm-hmm. You can be a Crip, you can be a Blood, you can be a GD, and it can function as like a social club, right? I know plenty of people that are in a set of Crips that haven't ever participated in a crime a day in their life. They're a part of the Crips because they grew up in a neighborhood, and it's literally like a social club. Everyone, all of their friends are in it. Their dads, uncles, cousins grew up on this same street, and that's their function. A deputy gang is different. Because they actually engage in crime. If you look at the California Penal Code, we've actually got a legal definition of a gang, which states that, you know, a gang, one, has a common name or identifying sign or symbol, which we have in the deputy gangs. They have their tattoos, they use gang signs, hand signs themselves. Two, has as one of its primary activities the commission of one of a long list of California criminal offenses. Well, we know that they're doing that because they kill people. I've reported on the gangs engaging in extortion of other deputies. beating up other people. I've heard of deputies raping people. So, you know, as far as the crimes they do, it really runs the gambit. The third panel that, or the third column that it takes to be recognized as a gang in California is members have engaged in a pattern of criminal activity, either alone or together. And again, this is exactly what's happening. When a deputy kills someone, you know, it goes up the chain of command to get that shot or that killing approved and, you know, to be found in policy. When these deputies are going to restaurants and beating each other up, you know, they're doing that as a group under the umbrella of their gang. So, you know, it fits perfectly into the box of what the California law has defined as a gang.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I guess, and maybe that is the thing that I think for like a lot of people who, if you're inclined to, and again, this is something that like, even like I am a person who, you know, more especially recently, it's been really underlined for me, but you know, I've sort of largely been in the like don't trust cops camp. But again, you know, I do have privileges and a different perspective on that make it hard to maybe feel it on a visceral level sometimes. So for anyone maybe like me who is like inclined to think like, oh, right, but what do we mean by gang? Like, this is it just like, you know, they all have the same hat or whatever? It's really not. Like, it's really like these people are, I mean, part of it must be, you know, they're obviously armed in their day-to-day. They have, within a hopefully limited scope, but does not seem to be, like, a license to murder. And they use it. And, like, that's a thing that, like, you know, I think this your reporting is really illuminating, is, like, it's not like a cute, like, oh, they're basically a gang kind of thing that's like easy to say on Twitter. It's like, no. They are like the movie version of the Crips, not even the real life version of
the
Crips.
Yeah, I think they're closer to like the mafia. Like, that's what they make me think of. I mean, I don't know if they're like as smart and organized as some of the OGs in the mafia. But,
right. But it's the same type of thing. Yeah.
The same energy, the same like spirit. Yeah. And another thing that I want to say that makes these deputy gangs a lot more dangerous than, you know, any criminal street gang is that our legal system is set up to protect these guys. So when they do something like wrong, when they are the subject of a criminal investigation, say for murdering somebody, they are protected by a law called POBRA, the Peace Officers Bill of Rights, which gives them the right to know everything about the criminal investigation before they speak to an investigator, meaning that they can review evidence, they can see any tape of the incident, they get to meet with their union representative, and they get to meet with a lawyer. And they're able to, you know, review everything together and cobble together a version of the story that fits into the police narrative of what is allowed for an extrajudicial killing, which is, I was in fear for my life. And that's what they say every time. And every time the DA declines to file charges, a large reason of that is because the district attorney is incredibly dependent on the sheriff's department to prosecute cases. A lot of times, the union for the sheriff's department will, you know, threaten the district attorney or apply pressure to say, like, you know, if we're going to go after our guys, it'll cost you. We won't show up to testify. Good luck trying to, you know, prosecute this high profile, you know, serial killer or what have you without our deputies. They have a really symbiotic relationship, the sheriff's department and the district attorney's office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the things that like makes the whole system so rotten, is that, you know, it is like, The only checks and balances against these people are themselves. And there is, honestly, like, why wouldn't you become a corrupt murderer in that instance? Like, it's if in a self-interested society or a self-interested like person, you're like, yeah, I can do whatever the fuck I want. I should profit from it. And if I don't, the person who will is going to take my place. Like, we create an incentive to create these fucking gangs.
A lot of times also, the people that don't want to go along with it, they are forced out in either through harassment, intimidation, like death threats, like actual attempts on their life. I've had deputies that have been, you know, shot at for whistleblowing on the gang. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, it's either like you join or, you know,
one way or another, you're not going to. But yeah, anywhere from literally to like, I can't be a cop anymore. But either way, you're done. You're done being a cop quickly. And this really, like, again, for any listeners, you know, that is sort of the crux of the you can't say all cops are bad refutation. You know, Cerise, you don't have to go on the record saying you think all cops are bad. I'm going to go ahead and up to you, I suppose. But, you know, that is the basis of that argument, which is like the system does not allow for a, quote, good apple to like even survive in the fucking.
Right. Yeah. Barrel. I mean, I'm comfortable saying that, like, and my reporting shows that, you know, anyone that attempts to be a good apple and call attention to this, they suffer horrible consequences. I've had deputies that have had guns pointed in their face, dead animals placed underneath their cars, their children were shot at. You know, like, it's horrible what they do to these people.
Yeah. Yeah. It is like, and you know, to the extent that like Hollywood is complicit in this shit, it's that like, it's the proportion of good, you know, the fact that we have hero cops in 99% of our movies, like, If we wanted to show law enforcement accurately, it's like 99.99% Serpico or more violent, or like Training Day with a different ending, and like everything else is bullshit. And like,
yeah, Training Day where the good cop, like, honestly probably like commits suicide. Like, that's
It is like, you know, that's, you know, to the extent, you know, I guess like some people, whatever. My job is as a fucking comedy writer, and you know, and not to single anyone out, I think this was a public conversation, but I know people that were writing on a show like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which like hugely sanitizes the police. Like, imagine thinking, you know, now that you see what police are like, like that, like, it's fucking hijinks in there. Those hijinks are a lot more racist and a lot more detrimental to other people, to civilians. I don't know. It's something that obviously, you know, I guess we all could grapple with more. And that's, again, why, like, you know, your reporting is important. Yeah. Was there anything more LA specific you wanted to say? Again, you know, this is all, not all, but like, please go read the piece. Is it called a piece? Series of pieces.
It's a series. Yeah, you know, all of those work.
Okay, thank you for rolling with podcast brain here. But yeah, no, please. I'm so afraid of missing something, so that's why I sort of keep punting to you with an open ended. Like, anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say that, you know, these deputy gangs are still very much alive and well in the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. I would encourage everyone listening to this to familiarize yourself with what's going on in our Sheriff's Department, because these tactics are happening all over the country, unfortunately. Maybe they're not calling themselves a deputy gang, but corrupt law enforcement that doesn't abide by policy and is, you know, really gung-ho about bad practices in order to, you know, beef up their career, that happens everywhere. So I think that reading about this, I hope that people will learn something and get activated in their own communities.
Is there like a, not necessarily like a specific like call to action, again, as in like simply the like defund the police, very vague and inflammatory, but also like it is like hard to really grab an action item out of this. Is there something that like people generally can like do, even if it's in the transparency front or something with their like local police? Or if you're a listener who is like, well, I hear you and I read this, but like cops are always nice to me, which is, you know, definitely a trap that more or less, you know, I'm always in danger of falling in. Hopefully I don't fall in it too much, but like it is certainly like a thing that like cops are nice to me, or like if you read this and then brace yourself to have a altercation with a cop that then goes well, I guess I'm just like how does one like internalize or think about this on even if you're not in Los Angeles? Or I don't know. I'm asking you a very open-ended question. That is.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a good answer. I mean, I would think that someone reading this series, like, I've been contacted by many people that have told me that they can't get through the first one just because, you know, we made mm-hmm. the choice to very graphically describe what exactly mm-hmm. these law enforcement officers have done to people. And I think that, you know, just hearing just like even one story about what someone did to someone, like I think of one of the early stories he tells, a story of Clydell Crawford, who was a man that was abused by multiple deputy gangs at different county jails. The first time it happened to him, he actually wanted to be a cop. And it's just heartbreaking hearing him tell the story of how he just became completely disillusioned with law enforcement and the justice system as a whole, really. Mm-hmm. He was incarcerated and he was beat up by a Ku Klux Klan aligned gang called the Wayside Whiteys. And they beat him with flashlights. And he described to me on a phone call watching one deputy jump on his leg up and down repeatedly until it broke. The deputy wanted to make sure that he broke Clydell's leg. And, you know, I've never been incarcerated in a county jail, but hearing that story, like, it tugs at my heartstrings. And when I spoke to him on the phone, like, we both, mm-hmm. we cried together. Mm-hmm. Maybe the cops have always been nice to you, but it's not yeah. the case for many, many people. If the cops have always been nice to you, I say to those people, like, God, lucky you. I've yeah. never had a good experience with a police officer. And I would just say, like, I hope that these stories, like, stick with you, and I hope that they mm-hmm. inspire you to get involved and to advocate for some changes. This stuff isn't supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. We have laws that are supposed to protect this stuff from happening. And I definitely, like, am not a patriotic person, but, like, as an American, I'm definitely upset. Like,
right.
this is something that's supposed to be enshrined in our rights for people that live here. And it disgusts me. I mean, I know that our yeah. system isn't perfect. I've, you know, right. been a victim of it myself, but just seeing it happen again and again and again, and it's just so,
yeah,
just like open, really. I mean, all of this yeah. stuff happens with the public's knowledge. Yeah.
Right. I wonder if that is actually, you know, to the extent that, you know, obviously do what you must do to protect your mental health from the descriptions of violence, I suppose. But there is a world where, like, that is, like, the thing that if you are a person privileged to mostly have had or exclusively had good interactions with the cops, like, you know, the thing to me that is, like, extra impactful about all of this reporting is the volume of it, the relentlessness of it, and, like, realize that, like, this is not a series of outliers being described. Like, this is, like, this is life for many people. And it is a thing, like, especially
a tradition.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is. It's like it is institutional. It's like part of the furniture with the police. And, you know, to especially, like, you know, the white listeners, or again, like, you know, as an East Asian person, you know, do not have the same types of interaction with the police typically, which is that, like, with the asterisk, to the extent that you can, like, it really is, like, a small thing you can do, which is, like, don't shy away from this. Like, because the system depends on you thinking, oh, this is other people. This evil, like, lives not in, like, I mean, it lives in a cover-up, but it lives in you accepting the cover-up. And, you know, as right. you will read, the cover-ups are flimsy as shit. Yeah. If you cared, if we cared, it's all visible. It's all there. And, like, believing it is, like, necessary but insufficient to changing things. You know, it's the first teeny tiny step
yeah.
of fucking doing something about it. I guess another question, sort of quick one, we're like nearing the end of our time, which is, like, is there something specific to Southern California or the county that, you know, I know you weren't specifically reporting on other gangs, but like, is there something like different about, I guess, LA or the sheriffs or Southern California?
You know, I really suspect that the fact that deputies have, you know, made gangs and, you know, have these like gang tattoos and gang signs and shit is just, it shows you how strong the gang culture is in Southern California. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's in everything from like the music that comes from Southern California, the clothing that comes out of Southern California, the way that we talk. It all has an element of gang culture. And I think that, you know, the fact that deputies are starting their own gangs
right.
is a product of like, that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, the gangs specifically. Right. So like, yeah, maybe it's just the places where people are, right? Because in New York and Philly, the tattoos are more like classically like, you know, KKK white supremacist type shit, because those are the big types of organizations where violent people gather to do shit together, or violent racists gather to do shit together. I don't know how to best to describe it. And in Southern California, maybe it looks more like gangs. So yeah, maybe that's part of it. It's like,
yeah,
even if like other places we don't call it a gang, the fact is it's like people are incentivized, police are incentivized and given the reins to start with murder, but you know, everything. They're like, mm-hmm. almost all of their illegal activity is like protectable under, you know, their quote unquote jobs.
Yeah. I'd also say that perhaps another element of it is a lot of these deputies are people of color. Mm-hmm. That might also play a role. You know, most of the sheriff's department is Latinx, actually. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these gangs, mostly Latinx members. But I think what we're seeing there is sort of an allegiance beyond community, beyond ethnic identity, beyond family. They always choose the blue over mm-hmm. anything else. It's always mm-hmm. the blue brotherhood. Keep the blue code of silence. Protect your brothers in blue. They're no longer community members. They're blue.
Yeah.
They're banditos. Yeah. They're grim reapers. Yeah. They're Vikings.
I think, and you know, and that really comports well with like, I think, because it's like the blue, but then their like behavior, and especially, you know, again, this is just a tiny sliver of my personal experience listening to the cops talk, is they use the language of white supremacy to talk about people of color. They see, you know, people as animals or criminals or thugs in sort of the same way, even though they may themselves be people of color. Because, yeah, that you know, ultimately, if I were to guess, feels like that's sort of why they're largely permitted by the ultra, ultra powerful. Is like, it's like, you know, they still wield the cudgel that keeps white Los Angeles, in this case, comfortable and happy and not having to look at unhoused people, for instance. Yeah, fucking grim shit. I don't know what else to say other than sort of like, yeah, is there not that this is your job at all, obviously, but is there like, you know, any sort of like silver lining to this or
silver,
you
know, lining? Besides... No, I do not have a silver lining for you. I do not. No, there is no happy ending to this. But I would say that, you know, if this is something that upsets you and you mm-hmm. want to get involved, I would recommend tapping in with organizations that have been long hard at work at this long mm-hmm. before I have. Trying to get this information out to the people, one, and also advocating for changes and even the abolishment of the sheriff's department. So I would point people to get involved with the Check the Sheriff Coalition here in Los Angeles County. They are doing great work as far as organizing for changes within the sheriff's department.
Yeah. That, I think maybe it's like, to the extent like that there will ever be a silver lining to this, it is up ahead of us, and that silver lining will require work from everybody. And
yes.
So like, you have a chance to become part of the silver lining, but everyone fucking busts their ass and do something.
But you gotta do it. Otherwise, yeah. We're all gonna...
Yeah. I mean, even as like it is like, you know, and yeah, things are only poised to get worse in Los Angeles. The Olympics will be here soon. So what happened in Echo Park is for this week, likely going to be simply a test run for a set of practices that will be rolled out over the whole city. Yeah. Mostly, you know.
A repeat of the 80s, really.
Yeah. And you know, despite what we'll call him liar Mitch O'Farrell has been saying to people, like, you know, people I know witnessed, people I trust and know witnessed, like, again, it was documented on places like Twitter, witnessed things that, like, in a sensible society, someone would, you know, the UN should be rolling in, or, like, this shit is, like, true fucked up fascist shit, arresting the press, arresting legal observers, surrounding a couple hundred protesters with 400 cops in riot gear. Like, none of this is necessary. And yeah, please don't let it be quiet. And again, to the extent that your mental health allows, like, try not to shy away from this. Like, this is all fucking real as fuck. And we're crossing into, if you keep your head in the sand, you're part of the problem territory as far as just life and society goes. I don't know. Is that a way to end a fucking podcast episode? That can't possibly be right.
I mean, it's real. Like, this problem is only going to get worse unless people, you know, do something. And we've known about this problem. You know, local government, state government, federal government has known about this problem since at least the 1980s. So they haven't done shit. I truly think that if we want to see change in this department, and I will tell you personally, I do want to see change. I do not want to have more Black and brown people murdered in the streets of my city. Mm-hmm. It requires us doing something. And I hope that this series inspires people to do that.
And so, yeah, can you tell people it's on Knock LA? Is there anything else, any other way to describe how to see it best? Besides, of course, there will be links.
Yeah, check out on Knock LA. I've been posting, you know, additional fun facts and pictures on my social media. You can check me out at Cerise Castle. And yeah, and I'd also ask that, you know, if you like the reporting, shoot us a dollar or two on Patreon. You know, these are all public records that I base my reporting on, but you do have to pay for them. And it costs over $3,000. And, you know, Knock is an independent nonprofit newsroom. So they don't have $3,000 to spend on more reporting. And this is something that I would like to continue doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, please do that. I know. To the extent you can, like, listeners, this is the type of thing that no one else is doing. And everyone should read this, or at least be aware of what is in this reporting. Cerise, thank you so much for being here. You know, we'll have you back under less grim circumstances, maybe. Although maybe with given your job, we will only have you back under grim circumstances. But
I don't mind.
Grim. Necessary. Yeah.
Yeah, grim but necessary.
Yeah. So, well, thank you so much. That is it, listeners. You know how to find us. That's all. This is Suboptimal.